This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. We're here. We are back. I mean, it's in the title, so you know we're back. It's another Tuesday. How are you? And speaking of being back, just so I can say that word one more time, I just got back from my first flight in almost 2 years. Sounds so crazy to say that. Getting back out into the world, y'all, it's a wild thing. You know, I think we're all finding as we venture out, what our new comfort level is, how we're going to operate going forward. But I got to say, honestly, it felt great to be out there traveling again. And you know what? Speaking of traveling, speaking of touring, how's that for a little transition? My guest this week has been on the road a lot this summer. Vanessa is on the show. So stoked to have her here. Vanessa has been busy this summer, playing a ton of the big festivals, putting out remixes for the likes of Peking Duck, working with labels like Dirty Bird, collaborating with Walker and Royce. One of their collaborations was actually the first record released on Diplo's Higher Ground label that he started earlier this year. She also has a residency at Disco Pussy out in Las Vegas that is going through the end of the year. Lots more tour dates, and there's going to be a link in the description of this episode where you can go follow Vanessa, grab the new music, keep up to date with everything she is doing. She is awesome. She was out on the West Coast when she and I connected. We recorded this episode, as I do with all of these episodes, live on Twitch, on my Twitch channel. That's right. If you've been living under a rock, man, lift up the rock for a second, just because I got to tell you something, then you can go back under the rock. Back to Back is now being recorded live on Twitch every single week, and you can come sit in the audience. You can come participate. You can come ask questions to your favorite artists every single week as I'm interviewing them. I've been having a great time hanging out with all of you guys on Twitch, forming a really, really cool community. I would love for you to come and be a part of it. You want to interact with me, you want to interact with anybody that I'm interviewing. That is probably the best way to do that, to reach out. And I'm not just doing the podcast either. I am doing DJ sets live on Twitch. And every single Friday, if you are a music producer, I am listening to your demos. I am listening to your whips every single Friday live on my Twitch. It's a show we call Do It Bang, where every single week, me and one of my best friends, who happens to be an amazing comedian, we listen to your submissions every single week live with everybody hanging out in the chat. It's such a great group of musicians and producers. Very supportive. We're going to give you some feedback, some thoughts, some words of encouragement. It's a great way to get your tunes out there. It's a great way to meet and network with some other like-minded producers. So that's every Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. The podcast I'm recording on Mondays and Wednesdays. The next podcast I've got coming up is next Monday at 2 p.m. Pacific. I am going to be welcoming back Kashmir on the show. Kashmir, the legend. He's going to be here Monday the 13th, and if you want to come ask him a question, all you got to do is hop in the chat. But look, today is all about Vanessa. I am so happy to have her on. I've been a fan of her music for a while. We had never met, but her production, I always felt like it just had so much personality. It reminded me of productions that I've loved in the past, but it has this modern touch to it. It's hard to describe, but if you check out those links in the description of this episode, go check out her music. You'll know exactly what I am talking about. We had a blast chatting. A bunch of awesome people came through while we were recording. Justin Martin dropped by. A bunch of people in the chat asked some great questions, really making my life easier. But no, we really had a great interview, and I think you will all enjoy this. If you do, let me know. I am at Willie Joy or at Back to Back Pod on all social media. You can also come join the Back to Back Discord. That's basically where I'm hanging out anytime when I am not streaming, and the link for that is in the description of this episode as well. I had a blast chatting with Vanessa, and I hope it puts a smile on your face to listen to. I hope you, the listener, yes, you, the person hearing my voice right now, man, I hope you're doing all right. I hope you're doing good. I hope you're happy and healthy. You know, wherever I'm finding you, whether it's in the car, in the gym, at home, at work, you know, if you're cheating a little bit at work, we love to see it. I'm not going to tell your boss. But like I said, wherever I'm finding you, I just want to send you some of that positive energy. Whatever goals you're working on, whatever you got going on in that life of yours, because we all got something going on. I hope it works out in the way that you want it to. And if you're going through it right now, if it feels like a slog, a struggle, don't worry. It'll get better. It always gets better. Sometimes it just takes a little time. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it. But hey, I got your back. The listeners of the Back to Back podcast, you know, some of the most intelligent, dare I say, attractive people on the planet, and you guys can do anything you put your mind to. So that's what I want to put out there to you this week. Much love to everybody who's been tuning in every single week. Much love for all the support on this show over the years. This train is not stopping anytime soon. Love y'all. Enjoy this episode. Let's do it right now. This is me and Vanessa back to back. Let's go. I'm like a caveman.
It's insane.
I'm like a caveman. It's crazy.
I straight up gave up on Twitch. I just...
Yeah, I feel you. Very much feel you on that. But yeah, Twitch is its own beast. I mean, did you...
It's a whole other animal.
Oh my God. I mean, did you at the start of the pandemic, like so many of us, did you get on Twitch and start streaming a little?
I bought like all the supplies. I was ready to go. And I was like, how the hell do I do this?
Which you were not alone at all in that.
I'm like, I'm still learning Ableton. Like I can't do I have so much on my plate. Like, how am I going to learn this too? And then it's like, you got to be a videographer as well. And it's just like, it's too much.
It's way too much. No, it's crazy. I mean, I remember there was a tweet. Who said it? I think it was Getter, who, and I don't know if you know Getter, but he's like a big gamer. It's just like, you know, he makes funny videos. He's a great, amazing producer and DJ as well. But, you know,
I've heard of him. I don't personally know him.
He's just the only, all of this is to say he's a person who should do well on Twitch. You're like, you look at him, you're like, right. Oh, he's made for Twitch. And then he tweeted out, he was like, did anyone else like just start streaming and realize they hate streaming?
Yeah. Totally. I just feel like, I don't know. Was so much, and then I would just get really mad at myself, and it would just start this whole spiral.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. How are you doing now? I mean, it's a funny time. I was just watching some videos of some of the streams that you did do over the pandemic, but then as I was scrolling through, some newer videos of like you at Hard Summer started popping up. So have you been back on the road a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much shortly after I got vaccinated, I just started traveling again to like, you know, Florida, Texas, all these other places. Once I got the vaccine and felt safe to travel.
Yeah.
And since then, it's just been nonstop, like touring more than I toured before. And it's been great because, you know, we haven't been able to tour at all for like a year and a half.
Right.
So it's been really nice. I feel like I have my life purpose again. And I just feel like, I don't know, I feel good. Music is coming in too. Like I'm starting to write music and it's starting to flow out naturally again. So I think just being out on the road and just playing again in front of people has just really like motivated me and given me more like creative energy, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, that makes perfect sense, especially given what we do is music that's meant to be played with other people around, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Was it hard to write music during the pandemic when we were locked down?
It was a little bit hard. I was making music that like, I don't know, it didn't really sound like me. And it kind of was... You can sense the mood in the music, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
So it wasn't like the happiest music. It was like kind of like depressing, actually. But I had a good time just experimenting with different sounds and mixing genres and, you know, listening to a lot of stuff I don't normally listen to and just kind of like stepping outside my comfort zone. So it was nice to experiment and just like not feel like I have to make a certain kind of music that I need to play at like festivals or shows. So just kind of like I made like some like 100 BPM tracks and just like slow chilled like hip hop tracks. And it was a really good learning experience. So not a lot of music came out of quarantine for me, but a lot of knowledge did, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of people. And it was kind of the same for me. It was, you know, it was a reset for everybody, right? But for,
yeah,
I think for what we do, producers and DJs, was that opportunity to kind of take stock and be like, well, why am I doing this again? What do I like to do? What do I like to listen to? All of that. Because
yeah.
I think it's so funny, but I think just those simple things can get lost when you're just sort of jumping from playing to playing or stage to stage.
Yeah, it's kind of like you remember a little bit like who you are again, you know, because I feel like a lot of times, like if I'm like playing a lot of festivals and traveling a lot, I kind of hear a lot of the same music, you know, from the other artists and myself. I play a lot of the same tracks too. And it's just kind of like, I feel like pressured to make that kind of music. So kind of stepping away from it for a while to make different stuff was really nice and inspiring in a way in itself.
Yeah, I completely feel you on that. And I'm hoping that as we come back and we start playing all those festivals again, and I'm hoping the sets get different again. You know what I mean? Because I'm right there with you. I would go to a festival and, you know, for 6 hours in a row, it's like, well, I don't even know who's playing right now, you know? Mm-hmm. And it could even be like friends of mine or people I liked. But I think there was just this pressure we all sort of internally felt that, you know, you had to fit into a certain box or do it a certain way. I hope that changes. I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I feel like right now, since everything's just kind of like coming back again, I feel like right now, like everyone's just really interested in just like huge bangers right now.
Yeah.
Because everyone's so excited to be out again and like partying and like raging. They just want to hear like the bangers. And then I feel like once things like open up even more and like, you know, people just start chilling down a little bit, then I think it'll go back into like creating new things and new genres and like new stuff you've never heard. But I feel like right now in the moment is just like bangers.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is fine. And don't get me wrong. I got
nothing. Which is fine. I love bangers.
I got nothing wrong with bangers. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. Not mad at that at all.
Not complaining at all.
No. While I was sort of reading up about you and I knew we were coming to talk, I was reading some old interviews and kind of just trying to trace back your career thus far. Tell me if I'm right about this. I feel like probably right before the pandemic hit and lockdown hit, like it felt like there was all this buzz and all this hype and then the pandemic hit and maybe that was put on pause. Like, was that a weird moment? I always wonder for people who are kind of just catching that spark and then something, you know, unprecedented, like the pandemic happens. Must have been a weird time.
Yeah. It really sucked. Yeah. I mean, I just kind of felt like, I really felt like 2020 was like my year. I was on like so many festival lineups and like getting better set times finally. And like, I felt like I had kind of like paid my due a little bit, just played to like zero crowds, opening festivals. And I felt like 2020 was like finally my year. I was on the Coachella lineup, like, you know, like all like Lollapalooza, like all these crazy lineups. And like all of a sudden, just like that, it just like all got taken away. And like, oh man, it was so devastating for me. And, you know, not knowing when things were going to come back and not knowing like, okay, well, you know, if Coachella ever does come back, if we ever make it through this, like, am I even ever going to get to play again? Did I miss my chance?
Right.
Like, is this going to go on for 4 years? Like, who knows, you know? So it was a lot of like, I don't know. It was just a lot of like self-doubt. And I kind of just felt like all the hard work was for nothing and it all got taken away, you know, but trying, like looking back at it now, just thinking of it in like a positive way, I'm kind of okay that I got that little break, because just seeing how much I'm touring now and traveling so much, maybe I needed that year and a half off to kind of just chill and like learn some things and take a breath and relax before it just goes to like 100 really fast.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's like the positive I took out of it. But like in the moment, man, it was It was rough. I was not happy. I was super depressed. Yeah. And like, it was just like my whole world just crashed, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it felt like. But, you know, I know a lot of people had it a lot worse too. And I'm not complaining at all, but it just like, you know, when you're, a lot of people kind of think like, okay, like, so what? You don't get to party anymore. And like, your festivals got canceled. But it's not just for us. It's not just like party. It's like, it's our livelihood. It's our hobby. It's our release. It's, you know, it's our work. It's what we love. It's what we surround ourselves with constantly. So
for sure. Well, so, and I mean,
that's the way I kind of look at it.
No, I agree with you. And I think, you know, one thing, I was just talking to somebody about this. I think something the your average like just listener of dance music doesn't realize is like how close to financial ruin so many artists are at all times.
Yeah.
So it's like,
I think people just assume like all DJs are just like balling rich, like driving Ferraris, like whatever. Right. But it's like, you know, I was planning on like finally buying like a new car in 2020. And instead I had to get rid of my old car because it broke down and I couldn't fix it. Like, yeah, yeah. Like that's how bad it was for a lot of us. Like, you know,
yeah. Well, so, cause that's it's one of those things where it's really like music industry career in general is so boom or bust, right? Where it's,
yeah,
if it's like spinning plates, right? Like as long as everything, you keep everything going all the time, it's fine.
Yeah.
But the second one of them starts to wobble, it can all fall apart. So fast.
It's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot of pressure. I mean, it's, No, go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, well, and I think a lot of people kind of like assume too that we're just making like bank off our tracks. It's like, you know, it's like people don't understand that like 90% of our income is from touring. Like we don't make money on our actual music.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like, I think it's like 0.0034 cents per stream.
Yeah.
Which is like, you can't live off that unless you're doing like Taylor Swift numbers. You're not making money off that, right, you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
So like a lot of people don't realize like that we have to tour or else we don't have money.
Yeah, 100%. And I mean, that's so maybe this is a good way to sort of start talking about how you got into this in the first place, because I think every musician at a certain point reaches that crossroads where what you do for fun starts to become what you do for your job. And,
right.
And you kind of have to like reevaluate that relationship. And it's one of those things you reevaluate it sort of constantly, I think, over a long career. But for you, I mean, let's take it super far back. Like this is a random question, but what are some of your earliest musical memories, like in general, like when you were a little kid?
You know, I remember my dad always playing, Pink Floyd all the time. My mom used to listen to like the Gypsy Kings. I remember when I started getting into like music, like when I was younger and like buying my own CDs and like listening to like things that I liked. I listened to like a lot of pop music and I listened to like a lot of hip hop too. And then like as I got like when I started, you know, like a teenager, I was listening to like a lot of like indie rock and like emo kind of music. And then after that, just start listening to like really insane, like heavy metal, like black Norwegian, like metal music. And then from there, house music, which is kind of like a weird transition.
I don't think it's that weird. I had a very similar, I was a huge metalhead and a huge raver in high school, kind of at the same time.
Okay. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of similarities in metal and like heavy dance music.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. I mean, I think for a lot of, especially for like a lot of younger producers and younger fans too, like, you know, something like dubstep, like that is metal for this generation. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I feel like for all like the Warped Tour kids, like dubstep is like the next step, like in like advancing like your music. Cause it's going from like heavy like rock into like, which is, I guess it's kind of like electronic rock, right?
Yeah.
So that would be like the next step, you know? I feel like it's like a smooth transition between the two.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think we're seeing, you know, there's people like, Sullivan King, who's like, you know, he's like a, he screams over his own stuff, plays guitar.
Yeah, he plays guitar too.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's like full on metal at this point. Yeah.
He's got long hair. He's a baby.
Right, exactly. Oh, it's perfect. It, it's perfect. No, he's like, he is a rock star. He's like the ultimate.
Yeah, totally.
I never realized that until we just started talking about it, but there was that whole period where like DJs started becoming rock stars, you know?
Right,
with like
right.
Justice. And I guess even you could take it back to Daft Punk, where it was like this big stage. But yeah, maybe somebody like Sullivan King, it's like he's taking it back to actual rock, which is really funny.
Yeah, it's he's like the entire rock band.
Yeah, which is right, exactly. One man band.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, hey, we got Justin Martin in here.
Oh, hey, Justin, what's up?
Shout out, Justin Martin. But where are you from originally? Because I know, were you in California your whole life, more or less?
Yeah, originally I'm from Orange County, like Southern California, Costa Mesa, Newport Beach area. And I just moved to LA about 4 years ago. It's not very far. It's like where I'm from is like an hour and a half away from LA.
Okay.
But it's, yeah. I feel like it's very different though.
Yeah. Well, I used to live in San Diego, so I'm familiar with that little strip between, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It is its own culture and kind of vibe and feel to it. How was it to grow up there?
I mean, it was great. I just, you know, I did beach camp in summer, which is you just go to the beach. I was on like the surf team in high school. We got to surf every morning and like, I don't know, we just rode our bikes everywhere. It was really nice. And like, there was a lot of like, kind of like surf rock bands and stuff that would always be playing. So we could go to like shows anytime we wanted to. And it was nice. I liked it. It was peaceful and pleasant. And
yeah, that sounds great. I mean,
it was active. It was very active. We were always riding our bikes.
Okay. Always riding your bikes.
We always ride our bikes to the beach and around the beach and stuff. So we're like little beach bum kids.
I mean, growing up on the beach sounds amazing. That sounds great, actually.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't like on the beach. It was probably like a 4 mile bike ride or something, maybe longer, but like still close enough to just have like fun times as a kid and like good summers and like adventures and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I feel like you got the experience that they make so many TV shows and movies about, right? That like SoCal beach bum vibe, which until I moved to San Diego, I literally didn't know that was real, you know?
Well, like me on the other side, like I would always see movies of like kids riding their bikes through like the woods and like it snows in Christmas and stuff. Yeah. So I'm like, dude, what is that about? Like, we don't have any woods here. What the hell? Like, there's no seasons here.
When did you see snow for the first time? Do you remember?
When I was little, because you know, there's in like San Bernardino and like Southern California, there's some little mountains there that have like some snow every once in a while. There used to be a place called Santa's Village, and it was like in Arrowhead.
Okay.
Where there's like very little snow, but like you could go up there and take pictures with Santa and ride a train. Right. And like it was like Elf Village.
They collect just enough snow for like one picture. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think I read recently that it's like shut down now and it looks all creepy and haunted.
Yeah, that
it's
I can
like all
imagine
dirty.
I can imagine it right now. Yeah.
I know. Might be cool for like a photo shoot or something.
Actually, yeah. That would be really dumb. Yeah. Nobody steal that. We're gonna use that. Yeah.
Trademark, patent pending. Yeah.
So it sounded like you had cool parents if they're listening to Pink Floyd and Gypsy Kings and all that. What did they do?
They were both in insurance. So like my mom and my dad were both insurance brokers.
Okay.
My dad still is. My mom's retired now. My mom's originally from Costa Rica and she moved here when she was 18 and then, you know, met my dad, had kids, got married, whatever. And she just retired like 5 years ago and moved back to Costa Rica. So she's living in Costa Rica now again. And I actually went to go visit her a few months ago. It was really nice.
Oh, that's great. Costa Rica, your mom is lucky to that she's there. It's like my favorite place on earth. Have you gotten to go any more off the beaten path kind of places? Like I know you've done some shows in Europe and other places. Like any weird ones?
I played in Mexico for EDC Mexico, and then I've been to Canada a few times. I got to play in Croatia at this, it was like a private festival called Ship Fam Island, where they rented this whole island in Croatia and it was only like 300 people and like a bunch of DJs. So that was really cool because, you know, we just get to hang out on this private island.
Talk about that experience for a minute, because that's such a specific thing. Like, do you know why they picked Croatia of all places?
I just think it's beautiful there. And it's maybe, I don't know, the island that they rented, it kind of seemed like it was set up for that purpose, for renting for music festivals, because they had these like, they were like yurts, like big yurt kind of cabin, like tent cabins, you know, with like bathrooms and air conditionings. They had a bunch of those already set up. So it's kind of like you just bring the talent and the people and like it's yours kind of thing.
Right.
I think Jared Leto did like a 20 seconds to Mars, like retreat there or something. Yeah. But I think he did it like during like the quarantine, which I think a lot of people were pissed about. But like, I was looking at pictures. I'm like, I think that's the same island that we went to. But
that's so funny.
It was really pretty. And I got to meet like so many, because it's such a small environment. I got to meet like a bunch of like really cool DJs I never met before. Like I got to meet Dorley and like hang out with Dorley and like
shout out to Dorley, man. Yeah, I met him so many years ago. Such a great guy. Yeah,
and his DJing is like it's out of this world. Like I watched him make a live remix on this like pad. He was doing it with his nose and stuff. Like I'm like, how are you?
Yes,
I can't do this with my hands. And he's making a live.
There's the DJ rock star for you. Yeah,
dude, it was awesome. But yeah, that was cool. That was a really good experience.
Oh, that's so cool. And I you know, it's so cool too, because that, like you said, it's a private thing. It's almost like 300 friends got together.
Yeah, exactly. Party, right? You kind of make a lot of good friends during it. And, you know, people I still like talk to and hang out today, like we've all met there, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. Cool. I feel like I don't know if this is intentional or if this is just, you know, how it happened, but between something like that and something like, you know, your relationship with Dirty Bird, which I think of as very much a like family community kind of vibe, kind of group. Like it feels like you end up in those kind of groups where it's like, it really is like a family community.
Yeah, totally.
Thing.
And I feel like a lot of, what was that festival in Croatia was based on was kind of like a lot of these people had met at Dirty Bird events, like Camp Out or Barbecue. And a lot of them were Dirty Bird fans. And there's so many Dirty Bird DJs playing. So it's kind of just like, it's like this like family that branches out to everything, you know?
Right.
Which is so cool. It's cool seeing like, you know, Lollapalooza in the crowd. There's like a bunch of kids wearing like Dirty Bird jerseys and stuff to like your set, which is like so cool. Cause you automatically know it's like, oh, those are fam. That's Dirty Bird fam, you know?
Right. Yeah. It's really nice because I think there's plenty, right? There's plenty of labels. There's plenty of, you know, like series of events that, you know, draw sort of a similar crowd each time. But I don't think there's that many that have that family kind of thing.
No.
Like it's actual
community.
And I
think a lot of people, a lot of people think that like you know, you sign to a label and like you're with that label. But it actually doesn't really happen like that. A lot of times you sign with a label and, you know, you're kind of with that label for like a few weeks while your song's out or a few months. And then it's kind of just like back to whatever. But like, I feel like Dirty Bird, it's not really like that. It's kind of just like you're kind of like with them now, you know, and like they treat you like a family and you feel like you're part of a family and like you can just connect with so many other people and just feel like that. It's just, it's a crazy thing that they have. Maybe it's a cult. I don't know. Maybe I'm part of a cult. I don't know.
Hey, I mean, you know, there's probably worse cults to be a part of.
Do you know like when you're in a cult or?
Ooh, that's a good question. Do you know when you're in a cult? I mean, probably not at first, right? Because that's how cults work.
Is this me figuring it out?
Yeah, this is actually your intervention right here.
This is my epiphany. Yeah. I'm in a cult. Shit, what do I do?
We've all come here to rescue you from this cult. Yeah.
This is a secret intervention. That's what it is.
Oh, man. Well, I do want to talk about, you know, how you first linked up with Dirty Bird and all that. But before we get there, let's take it back to when you're in Newport Beach and you're running around on your bike and your parents are playing music in the house. Were you always drawn to music? Like, I always wonder this about people who end up doing what we do. Like, was music a thing you were drawn to maybe more than the friends around you, the people around you?
I think I was, because when I was younger, I like asked to be put in piano lessons, and I really wanted to go to piano lessons, and like I didn't, like if we missed a week or something, I'd be like really upset. And like, I don't know a lot of kids that would be excited to go to like a music lessons, you know? And like, just like in middle school, I played clarinet, and then I played it a little bit in high school in like marching band and stuff. And then after high school, I just learned how to play the one beat on the drums, and then met some people, and they're like, let's start a band. I'm like, cool. And then I started taking drum lessons.
Wait, what was the one beat?
Just a basic like rock beat.
Okay.
Just like the kick snare on the one.
Yeah, the snare on the two and four. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. So, but then we started playing shows and stuff, and we weren't good. We were terrible.
Did you have a drum set? Like why?
I had a drum set. Yeah, I bought a drum set on Craigslist for $300. It was a PDP drum set, which is like a low end DW, I think. I don't. Or maybe it's a Pearl, like a really cheap one.
Sure.
And and then I just started taking drum lessons and just playing with the band and stuff. And then shortly after, I kind of just started going to like DJ shows. And then that's when I kind of was like, dude, I could just be the whole band, because I'm writing the keyboard parts anyways. I'm writing my drum parts, you know. We're always fighting. Like, this is stupid. I'll just do it myself, you know?
How are you writing the parts? Like, did you just from like band class or something? Did you know enough like music to write them, or were you doing it by ear?
Just by ear. I mean, I can read piano music, but like not very well. I haven't kept up on it very much, but I can figure things out on the piano by ear, just like little melodies here and there. So I would just write this like little piano part, and then we would kind of write the entire song around that part, you know, that little melody or something.
Right.
So I kind of was just like, kind of just wanted to do it on my own, and, you know, started going to DJ shows and like, you know, look, I don't need a band. I could just be one person like this guy and just play the whole song.
What age are we talking about when you started going to DJ shows?
I want to say like 19. So I was a late bloomer into like the electronic scene.
How did it find you, or how did you find it? Was dance music around? Were people you know listening to it?
It was around a little bit. Like I knew there was like places to go, like, they had like a, like, they used to do that Smog in Costa Mesa.
Oh,
and then they had like, I think like Skrillex used to do a thing that like the Detroit Bar and stuff. And like, I used to go to Detroit Bar to see all the bands I liked. Like I saw Modest Mouse there and like I'm a Robot and all these cool like indie bands. And I would see the flyers and, you know, they'd have like these crazy like DJ nights every once in a while. I'm like, I kind of want to check that out. And like, so I went a few times and I met like a few people at some of the shows I went to, and then started hanging out with them, like going to like music festivals with them and stuff, and kind of just like immersing myself like in the electronic music. I didn't know anything about like who was playing the festivals or like anything really about the music. I kind of just went with my new friends, and they kind of just like, I just went to whatever stage they wanted to go to, and kind of like, then I realized I would always be drawn to like whatever the house stage was. And I was like, okay, this is like my vibe right here.
Right. Yeah.
They would always go to like the bass stages. I'm like, this is cool. But then like the house stage, I was like, this is the one.
Right. Yeah. You start developing your own like specific tastes a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. And then I just feel like it kind of just evolved from there. And then, you know, just exploring music and discovering things and just kind of like finding like Dirty Bird. And then it's like this spider web of all these other artists that you can find. And
absolutely.
I guess how it happened. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, I think that's like one of those keys for people who end up, you know, having a career in this business later, I think, is at a certain point you end up just diving super deep into it without any, you know, you can get led there, but at a certain point you just go off on your own and it really becomes its own thing. I'm curious though, those early events you were doing, going to like Detroit Bar and Smog, do you remember, was it like the really early Smog shows? Because some of those were legendary.
It was after that, like Smog thing, the nights that they had there had kind of started dying off.
Okay.
And then they started doing like a club night there on like Fridays. And that's when they would have more like housey kind of artists playing on those nights. Because the Smog one, I think, was like on Thursday or something.
Yeah.
And then they had a place across the street too that would usually do a lot of like house, but like chill house, like deep house, disco house kind of stuff. So it's like we could go back and forth between the two. But this was, I used to go, I think it was after the Smog thing like started dying down. And they started doing like other nights at that same club.
Right. I don't know why we keep talking about dubstep, but the Smog guys are friends of mine. And I, Danny United, I don't know if you know him.
Yeah, I know him. I just saw him at Hard the other weekend. Yeah,
he's the best dude. Just earlier today, he was posting up some really old Smog flyers that he had found. And the lineups were just, it was like, you know, Scream and Benga and all these like UK legends that they just had at this little bar. You know, whatever it was 10, 12 years ago. It's so wild to think about.
Yeah, I know Flinch really well because he used to be friends with my cousin. And so I've known him before I even started like DJing and stuff.
He's the best, man. Flinch.
He's so cool. He's so nice. I haven't talked to him in a minute. I'm going
to
call him.
I know. Me too. I'm realizing this too. I used to talk to him a lot. I haven't talked to him in a while. He remixed the first single I ever put out like officially on a label.
No way.
Yeah. Way back in the day.
Look, it's a full circle here.
But so, you know, in all of this, you're going to the festivals, you're kind of figuring out that the house music is what's drawing you in and what you find really interesting. How quickly was it that you decided you wanted to get involved? Was it that frustration of trying to keep a band together, schedule everybody on practice, all that made you make the switch? I mean,
it was like, I don't know, because after I quit my band for a while, like I wanted to get into DJing, but I just didn't even know where to start. So for a while I was doing a bunch of like other like side project bands and just playing like kind of like in bands, like nothing serious, just here and there, like jamming and whatever. And I kind of did that for like, and floated around kind of just for like a year or so before actually just being like, okay, I need to figure this out because no one's going to help me. So like, how am I going to start getting the DJ, you know? And, you know, started talking to like the local DJs, you know, I would go to those like DJ nights and I would just like ask them like, oh, how'd you start? And like start talking to them and become friends with them. And they would help me like figure out, like I got this little like controller, you know, and I had to buy like a laptop and all this stuff. And like, they kind of like show me things like here and there and stuff. So I think like that was like a big help for me to get into it too. It was just like hanging out with like all the local DJs and like kind of just like learning from them and stuff too. But it wasn't right away that I went from like bands to like DJing. It took me like a while to kind of like to transfer into that. And then you know, when I first started, I started with another girl. So we were DJing together.
Okay.
And then that didn't really pan out. She had some other stuff to do and I wanted to keep playing shows. So that's when I started doing it by myself.
Got you.
And then realizing like, this is what I want to do with my life, you know?
Well, that's perfect. I was about to ask you when that mental switchover happened from being like, this is something I do for fun. This is a hobby versus, this could maybe I don't have to, you know, figure out my career, right? Like maybe this could be the career.
Well, I just felt like I just was going to so many music festivals and I just loved festivals, like no matter what kind of music was playing, like just the whole vibe of it. So that's what I wanted to do, was play festivals and kind of like, you know, was looking at all the DJs that were playing all these festivals and, you know, they're not playing a bunch of other people's music. They're playing their own music. So if I want to start playing bigger shows like that, I need to start writing my own music. And then that's when I started picking up Ableton and starting to do that. But, It took a while. I think I was DJing for a while before I realized like I need to start making music.
Sure.
I wish I started like producing when I started DJing, but
right.
It didn't happen.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, I'm very much the same way. It was years before I started producing after I started DJing, but
but I think it helped because it's like just DJing and like learning like the crowds and stuff like that. It like, so when I started producing and being able to play my own music out, it was kind of like a good transition for me because I already knew how to DJ. I feel like a lot of people now, it's like they produce and then they learn. So it's harder for them to get into actually DJing.
Oh, it's crazy. I mean, I talk to so many like younger producers who they'll get booked for like a big thing off of their mm-hmm. production before they've ever been on a stage before.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know which I can't recommend the way I did it either, because I felt like I struggle and I still struggle really hard, like producing and like transferring those skills onto the program for me is still frustrating and hard sometimes. And sometimes I think like it'll never click, but sometimes it does. And like, so right. I don't know which is better. I don't know if people should start DJing first or producing first. I guess it's just, I don't know.
Well,
just
do whatever, to me, I guess. Feels yeah, I, that's exactly right. I mean, in my opinion, it's like, you know, we all have our strengths and weaknesses, right? And for mm-hmm. what we do, it's like, you got to follow the fun of it, right? Like what is the part we're really passionate about? What is the part that makes us feel alive or happy or whatever that is? Uh-huh. And then the rest of it for me is like for me, it's DJing in front of people. That's like that's my happy place. I like to do that more than anything else.
I feel like every time I DJ, I love it. And I have like so much fun. Every single time I DJ, which is, I could, you know, it's not the same when I'm producing. Every right. time, every single time I produce, I don't have fun every single time. And sometimes I get pissed and sometimes I get frustrated. But every time I do have a good time producing, it, since it's so hard to have for me to like actually for something to click and for me to like vibe it and feel it, I feel like it makes those producing moments even better because yeah. they're more rare, if that yeah. makes sense.
Oh, absolutely. Like, absolutely. And it's like, you know, when you see those flashes of like, you know, that creative spark or that potential, it's mm-hmm. you realize that it's in you, right? And then it's like, oh, yeah. I can bring this out of me. That's such a cool moment.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. And I've learned so much. And like, right when I open Ableton, I'm like, ah. Oh. Sometimes I'm like, I can't make anything. I'm worthless. This is stupid. And then I'll just start making track. I'm like, I'm pretty proud of myself for figuring this out yeah. as much as I have. Like,
do you ever,
it's not easy.
Do you ever listen back to music you've made or released in the past and been amazed that you made it? Like I have that all the time where it's like, oh, this is really good. How did I do this?
Yeah. I feel like with me, it's either like, wow, I'm impressed with myself, or, oh God, I can't believe I released this.
Yeah, of course. It's one or the other. It's absolutely. Like
there's no in between.
Yeah, no, I agree with all that. And I think to put a period on the end of this sentence here is like, whether you start off DJing or you start producing, I think we also have to be kind to ourselves. So like we take the yeah. example of the producer who gets booked for a gig and has never been on stage before. It's like, go mm-hmm. into that understanding that like, you're not going to be good to start. No one's good to yeah. start, right? And it's the same yeah. way if you're a DJ who suddenly starts producing, like, it's, I don't know, it's the Malcolm Gladwell, like 10,000 hours kind of thing where it's just like, you just got to do it over and over and you will yeah, get better
exactly.
at it.
There's so much that you learn by experience than just by reading, you know, like you have to, there's so many things that you have to experience. And it's just a lot of it too is like, you know, how many times do you show up to a gig and like all the gears dialed in perfect?
Right.
It's like,
never.
It's rare. So like,
never.
So like if you start DJing for a while, then you kind of like, you know how to think on the fly and how to fix short ways, how to fix things and like stay on your toes. So it's like things like that, that you can only really learn from experience. And like having that happen to you to know what to do next time.
Exactly. And to not get frustrated or upset by yeah. it.
And it's the same with producing too. Yeah. It's like, you know, you learn something, so you know not to do that the next time, you know? And like, I feel like with producing for me, eventually it's kind of like a puzzle. It's like, it's hard and sometimes it's frustrating and sometimes it doesn't work out, but like, sometimes you start putting the puzzle together and it's a fucking really fun.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're doing it with people too. You know, if you're in yeah, front of a
exactly.
crowd, like you might make a decision you wouldn't have made otherwise if they
exactly,
weren't there
yeah.
and all of a sudden something clicks. I mean, that's the beauty. I can go on and on about how beautiful I think this kind of stuff is.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, like streaming a DJ set is so different than playing in front of
true.
People. Because, you know, you feed off their energy, and then, you know, you kind of like give back the energy as well. It's like a give and take the entire time. And I feel like that's hard to do when you're streaming or playing to like a camera or something like that. So it's hard to make that translate.
Props
to everybody who can, because I have such a hard time with it.
No, I do too. And there are people who do such an amazing job of it, but
they're meant for show business, you know,
100%.
They're showbiz. And like, I try and I think I'm okay at some things, but like, I don't know. It takes a certain kind of person to just be good on camera all the time like that. Like, I can't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's interesting though, because if you were playing in bands from an early age and all of that, like, I have to assume you were comfortable getting on stage, getting in front of people from an early age.
I mean, I don't know. I definitely like to, you know, showcase the talents that I do have. But I also at the same time hate being under the microscope. Yeah. So it's kind of like, I don't know. Sometimes it's like hard for me to like make sense of the two. But like I was convinced for a while when we did the band that like all these other cool local bands would come see us. Like, you know, we had some buzz. But then I'd get in my head, I'd be like, oh, they just want to come because they know it's a bunch of girls. They want to see a girl drummer like mess up. That's why they're coming, you know, and kind of like get in my head and stuff. But like, I'm learning to be nicer to myself and be kinder. And like, I feel like music production is like a good way to like let yourself like release and also like be good, like be nice to yourself.
Yeah.
I've been learning that like little by little because like you're your hardest critic, you know?
Oh, absolutely you are. And I am, and we all are. I mean, that's absolutely true. But it's interesting, you know, hearing you talk about that, you know, you haven't been producing that long and there's still things that frustrate you and all that, because I feel like I was going through a lot of your catalog earlier today, and sonically to me, it's like, it's really cohesive. It's like, I felt like I could see, like hear your voice in it and see your perspective. And there were all these interesting influences I'd kind of forgotten, especially with some of the older tracks. Like there's, you know, sort of like classic electro influences.
Yeah, everybody tells me that like I use a lot of like my music reminds them of like classic like 90s kind of sounds and stuff. But like, I don't know, it's weird because for me, I can't hear, I'm still trying to figure out my voice, I guess. I can't really hear it in my songs. Like, I think it's easier for other people to hear it than for myself to hear it. I don't know, because I feel like I'm still like trying to like figure out my voice, but people tell that to me, which is cool. Like, I think that's a really big compliment.
Oh, it's absolutely. Yeah. I meant it as a compliment. I was wondering if that was an actual influence, like is, because I hear like flashes of older styles of dance music in your production, but then I didn't know if you were actually listening to those older styles. You know what I mean?
I mean, I listen to like a lot of old music. Like I listen to like a lot of like LCD Sound System and like Holy Ghost and like a lot of like that like Bloghouse stuff and like Fatboy Slim and stuff like that. And I don't know. I just really like, you know, like the classic sounding like drums and like snares and claps and kicks. And I love disco too. So that might be part of it too.
Yeah.
So no, I just really love disco.
No, I love disco too. Absolutely.
I love disco.
Well, and it's cool because I could absolutely hear flashes of that in your music, but then, you know, you're not a disco house producer. Like that to me is maybe a better way to say what I was just trying to say is I think there's all these touches of different styles in your music, but you're putting them together, I think, in a unique way. And, and I don't know if that's a conscious thing. Like, is that something you think
about? It's definitely subconscious. I think I'll have a sound that I want to make in my head, and then that's how it comes out. And I'm like, that's not how it was supposed to sound, but I guess it's cool too, you know?
Yeah. Well, that's like, you know, transferring what you hear in your head to the software, I think, is the hardest part.
Oh man, it's the hardest.
It's the hardest part.
For me, like, because I've recorded with like bands, like actual, like, you know, like a drum set, not like it's so much easier for me to just play a drum set than it is to program a drum set, like drag like samples and like all that onto Ableton. Like, it's just so much easier for me to do it like analog style, but it's like, you have to like relearn how to do it.
Yeah, no, it's absolutely true. I mean, have you ever, just out of curiosity, you know, they've got like the MIDI drum sets and all that. Have you ever messed around with anything like that? That could actually be really interesting.
Yeah, I used to have like a Roland drum pad. It was like a SPD something. But I used to have that when I first started like DJing and stuff. I used to have that and kind of do some live drums. But when I first started, I was playing just like really crappy clubs and like venues that weren't set up to have that. They were just set up for the CDJs. So I ran into a lot of sound problems and stuff like that. But I'm looking into like bringing back some more live elements. And that's something I'm working on for next year. I think I'm going to try to do like live drums on like an actual like electric drum set.
Oh, that'd be great.
And try to do like some like live piano and maybe just like launching other clips and stuff. But I definitely want to bring more like drumming into it because I really miss playing. And I told myself I wanted to do kind of like a live performance at some point. And I just really miss it. So I'm going to start working on that and hopefully start doing some of that in like 2022.
Oh, that'd be fantastic.
Once I get it nailed down.
Yeah. Of course. No, take your time. What kind of music was the band playing? Was it a metal band, like an indie band?
No, it was like indie rock.
Okay.
Like indie rock and some folk and, you know, with like, I guess, a little bit of punk. But it definitely wasn't metal. I can't do double bass.
Yeah, that's hard.
Nope. I loved double bass, but I could not do it myself.
Yeah, no, I mean, some of the best drummers, I mean, to me, it's like the best drummers in the world either play jazz or they play metal. You know, we sort of hinted at it a second ago, but for you getting into production in the first place, how did that happen? What did that look like?
Looked like me just like clicking on things in Ableton. and then, you know, watching hours and hours of YouTube videos. And like, you know, I think what helped me a lot too is I started collaborating and working with a lot of people, and I would pick up like little hints and tricks and learn from other people when I worked with them. So that was really cool. And like they would learn stuff from me too, because I feel like I learned in such an unconventional way. And I just kind of figured out how to do a lot of stuff that might not be the right way how to do it. So like when someone would show me, oh, like this is how I put like a sidechain on, and be like, oh, I've been doing it like this. I'll be like, whoa, that's kind of a weird way to do it, but it works too, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of like you learn from each other. So I think like collaborating and working with other producers like helped me a lot in the beginning, because you can watch a lot of videos, but the hands-on stuff is like what really like helps you learn, I think.
Oh, 100%. And yeah. Working with other people early on is super valuable. And something else you just said too about kind of doing things the wrong way because you didn't know the right way, quote unquote. Like that's the tradition of dance music. Like that is the reason we have 808s is because somebody was using the 808 machine wrong, you know what I mean? Or was using the drum machine the wrong way. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's a
thing I love about Ableton too, is like there's so many ways to do one thing. There's like 100 ways to do one thing. And it's like, you know, it's like a choose your own adventure kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it's so cool. And then when you, like you said, when you work with somebody else and see how they do, you can do the same thing, but you might go about it two totally different ways.
Exactly,
it's super inspirational.
Yeah.
I mean, who were some of those early people you worked with off the bat?
I worked with Eric Mark a lot. He's does a lot of like tech house and like drum and bass too. I learned a lot from Bot, and you probably know Bot.
Oh,
used to be in Crookers.
I love Bot. Yeah,
he is very unconventional himself. The way he does a lot of things too. So I learned a lot from him, and just like. Let me see, like Astronomar has taught me like a lot of cool stuff.
I love Astronomar so much.
And then working with Walker and Rice too. I've learned a lot from Walker and Rice as well.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I want to talk about them in a second, because I know you guys have been very collaborative over the years.
Yeah, they're right in there.
Oh, okay.
This is like a big creative space. So, and there's like a big warehouse, and I have like this little room in the back, and they're in there filming like a bunch of like content right now because they're about to launch a label. Their label soon.
Oh, that's great. Hell yeah.
Yeah. I so they're doing like some videos and stuff.
Oh, that's fantastic. Like, yeah.
I think, I have the doors closed. So there's no AC in here. So I'm kind of like sweating.
Oh, man. Well, I'm sorry to, sorry to keep you up.
No, it's all good. Yeah. No, it's all good.
Yeah. That's, I've been there definitely. But yeah. talking about Bot is interesting. How did you meet Bot? You know, used to be one half of the Crookers there.
I met Bot. I was playing This Ain't Bristol party in California, like their first and only, I think, ever like California party, that old label, This Ain't Bristol.
Yeah.
And I was playing one of their parties. And then I think Bot played too. And we kind of just met on the dance floor and just started talking and stuff. And then I don't know, just kind of went from there, like, hey, we should work together. Like, and, you know, I was going for a while. I was going to Bot's house like every other day and like kind of like just working on music with him. But it was also kind of like he was teaching me. He was kind of like a mentor in a way, you know.
Yeah.
And like I learned so much from him.
He's incredible.
He's incredible. And like he's so good at like EQing things. Like his ear is like insane. It's like, when will I ever be able to hear the things that you hear?
Oh, it's
like the way he picks out frequency. It's like insane. I don't know how he does
it. He's a magic ear. It's absolutely insane. There's one time, there's a very random, has nothing to do with anything, but there's one time he mixed and mastered a thing I was working on. And when I got it back from him, I almost quit music. It was so good.
Right?
I was like, there's no, I couldn't have even gotten close to what this is.
I know. It's insane. It's insane.
Yeah. And I mean, if you even look at, we were talking about Bloghouse earlier. I mean, the effect Crookers had on the dance music scene, there was nobody making music like that.
No. You know, I just learned recently too that their Kid Cudi remix, The Day and Night, like that famous, like the huge Crooker song, that was in the beginning, it was like a free download on SoundCloud or something. They just did it because they wanted to.
Isn't that crazy?
And then Saw was getting like a bunch of like hype and then took it down and then like, but it was like started off as a free download. Which
it's
insane.
So crazy. I mean,
that's one of the biggest songs. Like I still hear it on TikTok all the time.
Oh,
you know?
It's still a huge song. And also like, I don't know that Kid Cudi has the same career, if not for that song.
Oh,
you know,
no. That launched him for sure.
Yeah, that made him
famous. And then there was another one too, like a Steve Aoki did a big Kid Cudi remix too. And then that one also, I feel like the remixes are really launching Kid Cudi, which is great. Like it's a mutual relationship, you know. It's good for the remixer and it's good for the original artist.
Absolutely.
That's what we want, right?
Yeah. But it's just so cool. I'm with you to think about the ripple effect of just like, oh, you know, I made this remix, throw it on SoundCloud. And then here we are, what, 12, 15 years later, talking about how this changed the course of dance music and pop music.
So crazy.
Yeah.
And we know him.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. He's my buddy. I love him. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool.
No, it's so cool to think about. And, okay. So maybe that's a good way to talk about your track Word, which you did with Walker and Royce, which I feel like for you was maybe an unexpected hit.
Oh, definitely. Same with Walker and Royce. Like we had been playing that song for a while and no reactions, no one batted an eye. But then, you know, like Chris Lake started playing it and like Claude Von Stroke started playing it and like Green Velvet started playing it. And then people are like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Sometimes it's timing, right? Or sometimes you have to like see it in the right context.
Yeah, totally.
And then all of a sudden,
you can hear a song in like some crappy headphones and be like, whatever. And then you can watch a DJ play it at like EDC. And, you know, it's two different experiences.
Absolutely. So what was the experience for you of having a song really blow up like that? Was that the first time it had really happened in that way for you?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was making music like here and there, but it, you know, just kind of was on like smaller labels and, you know, wasn't really getting that much attention. And then, you know, when that one started getting a lot of attention, it kind of just like blew up like crazy. And, that's when I started like touring a lot is after that song came out and I started getting like going on planes and like going to different places to like tour. Cause before that was just, you know, it's kind of like local stuff, but it's definitely like that definitely like opened a lot of doors for me, and I was able to work, like, all of a sudden all these great producers were hitting me up to work with them and stuff, you know, because they wanted vocals and they wanted to work with me and stuff. So it definitely opened a lot of doors, and it was really cool that Walker and Ice let me be a part of it and, like, let me work with them and stuff to begin with.
Have you always done vocals on your own stuff?
I do it a lot, only because it's kind of hard for me to find vocals that I like to work with. I have a hard time working with, like, singing vocals. Like, it's easier for me to work with just, like, talking vocals.
Right.
And, you know, I would cruise, like, Splice and stuff like that. And it's just, like, I wouldn't really find anything that I really liked or really connected with. And I'm just like, I got a microphone. Or, you know, I would record on my phone, like on the voice memo on my phone, and email it to myself and put it in the tracks. And that's how kind of I just started doing it, just because I would only use my voice because I couldn't find anything I liked.
That's
and so I would use my voice and just pitch it or do whatever. And then that's how that started, I guess. And
I guess, yeah. I mean,
no, I don't like my voice. I don't like hearing my voice.
Really? That's interesting. Because I feel like it makes your tracks so distinct. And I really like the way that you use your voice in your own tracks, because it's not always, I think there's maybe a tendency with some artists where to put that in the forefront, you know, and with you, sometimes, you know, it's just like a word or a phrase kind of in the background or chopped up, and it almost becomes,
show you what I think about my voice.
I mean, fair enough, but I think
I think everyone hates the sound of their voice, right? Isn't
that a thing? Oh, I mean, when I started doing this podcast, don't get me wrong, it took me years to get used to it.
I'm finally comfortable, like, playing, like, Rave Grave and Word and, like, Wavy out to crowds and hearing my voice, and it's taken me like 3 years to finally, like, be okay and not, like, embarrassed about it, you know. It's just, I don't know,
but that's a good way, like, you turn the negative into the positive, right? Of, like, being embarrassed about it or whatever it was, maybe chopping it up more or hiding it more, but then that becomes a style, right?
Yeah, I guess so. And, like, I don't know, I feel like it's harder when you're, like, putting your voice, like, whether it be singing or talking, like, into a track, because, you know, like, anyone could just play piano or make some drums or whatever, but when it's actually your voice, like, saying it and saying the words and stuff like that, you kind of put a piece of yourself out there and make yourself vulnerable and, like, open to criticism. And it's kind of hard, but it's also, like, I think it's a good growing experience to kind of make yourself vulnerable like that, because when you're uncomfortable, it pushes you harder and further. So I think everyone should try it. Put your own voice in your tracks, pitch it, you know, and just see how it feels.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. And what you said a second ago too about the phone recorder, like, phone microphones are pretty good these days. You don't have to have, like, a fancy setup.
No, you know, I did it yesterday. I went in, I opened my closet, you know, because I wasn't at the studio. I opened my closet. You know, you got clothes hanging in and stuff. There's acoustics right there. Pull your phone out and talk into your closet and boom, right, vocal right there.
You know? 100%.
As long as you don't have any fans going or anything like that. And all that stuff you can EQ out anyways. So.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. I mean, closets are legend. That's where a million amazing pieces of music have been recorded in a closet.
Yeah. You know, when I used to take drum lessons, I didn't have a drum set right away. And I used to tell my instructor, you know, I would come in and be like, oh, did you practice that beat? I'm like, I mean, a little bit, but, like, I don't have a drum set yet. So, and he'd be like, that's no excuse. Like, I played drums on a stack of phone books before. I had to do it for 2 years before my parents ever bought me a drum set. Like, there's no excuses. Like, it's kind of one of those things where, like, it's the poor worker that blames his tools or whatever, you know,
right,
it's like, You can say, like, all these things, like, I don't have a microphone, I don't have this, I don't have this. If you want to do it, you'll find a way to do it.
I love that. And you're spot on. And it's one of those things too, right? Where I think as a producer, as a DJ, whatever, to anyone doing anything creative, if the easy way out is to be like, oh, well, it's not working right now because there's something I need outside of this that I don't have. There's some external, whether, you know, oh, if I just get this piece of gear, then I'll be good at music, you know,
exactly,
or whatever
it
is. And that's never, ever the case.
It's all, like, in the end, it's kind of all excuses and, like, you kind of have to, like, look in the mirror and be like, is this something I really want? Because if you really want this, you can have it. You just have to get it. and you have to work hard and you can't give up. And like, you know, I kind of have this like drive. I don't know where I got it from or how or whatever, but like, if I want something, I'm going to get it, you know, and I put my sights on something because like, I feel like if I don't, then I let myself down and I don't want to let myself down. So I feel like it takes a lot of to learn new things like Ableton or DJing or whatever. If it's something that you want to do, it takes hard work and drive mostly. Like you don't have to have studied music as a kid. You don't have to have you don't have to be born with talent. You can learn it. You just have to have the drive to do it.
Yeah. You were saying, you know, you've kind of always been that way. Did you ever think you were going to do something else with your life?
I wanted to do so many things. Okay. I wanted to be a professional surfer at first. That's what I wanted to do. And then, you know, I picked up a pair of drumsticks and I wanted to be a professional drummer, you know, on tour in bands. And like, but I feel like everything that I failed at has taken me to where I am today. So like, it's kind of like you have to take the sweet with the sour. Like, I wouldn't be here today if I didn't fail at all these other things. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course.
Like failure is such a great learning experience. And it's such a great way to find out like what your true passion is. You try a bunch of things and fail at them and keep going from there and keep trying to figure out what you want to do.
Yeah, that's I give that advice all the time. I mean, especially for up and coming producers, aspiring musicians, all that. I mean, it's like I there's this romance idea, right? Of like, oh, it's the whole thing is going to be romantic and amazing. It's like, well, no, actually, it's going to suck really bad for like a long time. But you know, if you can set yourself up to understand that and embrace that, you know, because we all have to do it. Like that's the price of this career. That is like, you got to work through the shit at the start.
Yeah. And I feel like it's good for people to talk about like, you know, all the failures that they've had and all the hard times and times where it like went terribly and stuff like that. Because I feel like so many people in this industry just compare themselves to other people, which can be really like detrimental to like your mental health and all that. And it's just like, if you look at someone's Instagram, you don't know that they had a hard time or, you know, it's kind of one of those things where like social media is kind of fake. Like nobody talks about how hard it was for them. You just kind of see them headlining these stages. So a lot of people think it's easy, but I think it's good for people to talk about like the struggle that they had because it makes other people think like, okay, so it's not just me. It's hard for everyone. I can do this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. 100%. I love that. I mean, have you learned anything about keeping yourself healthy and happy and insane in all this career? Any secrets you've discovered along the way?
I feel like it's good for me. I like to have like a loose schedule for like my week. I make sure to eat right and exercise when I can. Like it's not easy to do. Like I eat a lot of crap too. And I definitely have days where I don't get off the couch, but I know like if I feel crappy, this is going to make me feel better. And it's just part of like, kind of like taking care of yourself mentally as well. Like kind of going easy on yourself. Like you have a crap day in the studio, like don't beat yourself up about it. Tomorrow's another day kind of thing. And it just kind of like it kind of like helps me like remind myself that like everything's fine.
Right.
You know, just instead of eating a whole pizza, go to sleep early and go for a walk in the morning. You know, like it's kind of like you kind of like learn how to like treat yourself nicely and then it makes your time easier.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
And it's hard
right.
for me to remember sometimes when it's, you know, I'm trying.
Yeah, of course. Well, and other times you got to kind of let yourself have those moments too. You know, if you screw it up
totally.
Or if you eat the pizza late
balance.
At night. Yeah, exactly. It's like,
life is about,
you
know, balance.
Yeah, life is absolutely about balance. How are you with what you were just talking about as far as, you know, comparing to other people and I always talk about the social media part of our jobs, which I think people don't understand how annoying or stressful that can be.
It is. I'm just talking to someone about it, actually. It's kind of just like, you know, it takes so long to post just like a picture on Instagram. Right. You got to tag all the right people. You got to post the links. You got to make sure you know, everything's fine. It takes kind of a while and it just like...
Think of the best caption.
Yeah. And it's kind of exhausting. So at, you know, I was stressing about it for a while and just trying to make everything perfect. And now it's just like, I'm just going to post it, whatever. I don't care how many likes I get. I have the, like them hidden from me, so I don't have to see it. I just think it's like, I think it's definitely good to have social media so people can know where to find your music or where you're playing and stuff like that. But I'm trying these days to get less and less involved, less scrolling and stuff like that. It's, I like to see what my peers are up to, but I don't need to be staring at like videos all day.
Right.
So which is, you know, we live in a time where everyone's on their phones constantly. Everybody has so much information at the tip of their fingers that it's kind of hard to remember, like get off the phone and be in the real world. But it's good to just be in the real world and not do it all the time. I know we have to for our jobs, but I mean, I just think it's good to just like, sometimes I just leave my phone at home too, where it's because I just don't want to deal with it, you know?
Yep. That's the key. I mean, that's, you know, and for what we do too, right? It's dance music. It's meant to be experienced in a communal setting with people. Uh-huh. And to me, phones and all that just get in the way sometimes. You know, if you're out at a show and everybody's on their phone, that too, it's like, you know, I feel like you're not just screwing up your experience. You're screwing up everybody's, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to like talk badly about, you know, I know some people are more comfortable on a screen than in front of people. That's fine too.
Yeah, it's definitely like a social anxiety kind of mechanism for me sometimes too.
Yep.
And like, it goes the same with like, you know, like drinking and stuff. It's like, sometimes it's like, you feel like uncomfortable in the club or something like that. Like, okay, I need to have a drink in my hand or be on my phone or something. So I know it's hard to like not do those things. And I struggle with it all the time too, but I'm trying to make a conscious effort to just do it less and kind of just like be off the phone. Like, I don't need other things to feel comfortable, just to like be myself. And, you know, I don't know. Social media really like messes with you, you know?
I mean, it's designed to, right? Like, we're learning more and more that like they actually made it to be addictive. And
I know.
I mean, it's that's so a whole nother rabbit hole.
You can't be too hard about on yourself sometimes. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I catch myself like scrolling every once in a while, but it's like, what do you expect from me? That's what they made it for. So. Right.
Exactly. And
I can't be that mad at myself.
You really can't. I think that's being able to just let yourself off the hook, I think, is maybe the most important part of this whole thing.
Self-forgiveness, I think.
Yeah.
Is good.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Self-forgiveness. And then also to take it back to something we were talking about earlier when we were talking about like DJing first versus production first, what I was thinking about then, and I'll bring it up now because I think it applies, is the idea of like always trying to be grateful and always trying to put yourself in a place of gratitude. Because for me, I think one advantage people who start DJing first have over the people who start producing first is that we've played a bunch of crappy shows already. Like, because when you start off, you know, there's plenty of shows where you're playing to 5 people, 10 people. And so
zero
people for real. and so for me now, if I get on stage and there's 100 people, I'm like, oh man, this is great. Cause I know what it was like when there were 0 people.
Yeah, totally.
And it's way easier to be grateful for all that too. So even for the hard stuff, it's like, if you can find something to be grateful for in it, I think that's big key. So I wanted to talk, we mentioned for a second, you know, your relationship with Dirty Bird. How did that start? How did you meet those guys?
I had been like a fan of Dirty Bird for a while and just like, I don't know, just on social media would like talk to producers and DJs and people that work for Dirty Bird, like here and there. And then, you know, I started kind of like hanging out with Walker Royce, making music with them, you know, like Word and stuff like that. And like going to camp out and kind of like meeting the DJs and stuff like that. And then, you know, started like producing music and like sending it to some of them. And then just kind of like, I don't know, just making good friends and hanging out just as like peers. And then, you know, it's starting to get booked for like Dirty Bird stuff here and there and stuff. And just every time you like see each other, it's kind of like you bond even more, you know? So it's kind of like a little like touring family now, because I always see like someone from the Dirty Bird fam is going to be on the same lineup, you know, at some point of like whatever festival or whatever. So it's like, it's just kind of like seeing each other every once in a while. It's like kind of like seeing like an old cousin or something they haven't seen in a minute, or, you know, like an old friend or something, and like catching up and stuff. So I don't know. It's, I guess, just like probably working with Walker and Royce a lot, you know, was kind of like, I guess, a gateway into like the Dirty Bird scene, I guess.
What, and how
but
did
I was
you,
definitely a fan before that too.
Of course. Yeah. And how did you meet Walker and Royce? Was that just like locally going to some of the same
stuff? I opened for them a few times. I opened for them at that club in Costa Mesa that used to be Detroit Bars Wayfair now. And so I opened for them once there, and then like another club in Orange County. And then, you know, every time they were in LA, like we'd meet up or hang out, you know, and stuff. So it kind of just like, and then, you know, Gavin moved to LA. Sam still lives in New Jersey, but he's here right now. But Gavin moved to LA, and then we got to hang out and work together even more.
What is it about the connection you have with them? Like, you guys have worked together a bunch of times, and it seems like mm-hmm. when you do, you're making really interesting music that people are really into. What do you think it is about that connection, about you guys getting together, that produces, you know, these great results?
I kind of think that like when they work together on music, it's kind of like they have like this like kind of like safe space where it's like nothing you do, nothing you say could be stupid. We're not, right. No one's going to laugh at you. You know,
bad ideas.
So, exactly. So it's kind of just like, I think it's just like that environment that they create, just like a comfortable environment just to like create with no judgment. And I think that's kind of like why it's was so easy to like create with them, and like why it seems so effortless for them, because they are that's like part of like their thing, is just being comfortable and like, yeah, like no bad ideas kind of thing.
Yeah. Right? I love that. I mean, it was cool to see, you know, the releases you did with them on Higher Ground Records, which was, you know, Diplo's label. And that was like the first release they did, right? Or am I wrong?
On Higher Ground. Yeah, that was Higher Ground's first release, was that EP.
Yeah, which is, to me, just speaks to the kind of special music you guys are making together, where it's, you know, if they're picking that to start off, you know, Diplo's house label, it's like, I think that says something. I don't know.
I feel like we work together really well. And I always joke with them and say that, you know, one of them's Walker, one of them's Royce, and I'm like the little ampersand in the middle.
I like that a lot.
I'm like, there's like salt and pepper, and I'm like Cinderella, like trying to join the band. Right.
I like that a lot. Although I would say that didn't end so well for Cinderella.
I know. That's why I can bury myself. They keep telling me no.
Right. That's really funny. Do you think you'll keep working together?
Yeah, totally. We've been talking about creating something soon. They've got a lot going on with their label and stuff, and they're going to launch that soon. So I think probably like the next few months, we're going to work on something again.
Awesome. That's great to hear. I mean, it makes me want to ask, you know, just for you coming up, you in 2021, like, what are you excited about? What's like the most fun part of what you're doing? What are, you know, if you have any goals, anything upcoming, all of that, but like what's fun about what you do right now?
For me, it's, you know, just a big part of it is the touring aspect and just playing for crowds. I don't know what to expect, and I haven't played for, like, I just played for Lollapalooza, which is, you know, it's not a rave. It's more of like a band hip hop. It's kind of an everything festival. So those kind of festivals, you don't really know what to expect. Like, you would like Hard. Like, I knew everyone at Hard was going to go off. It's like an electronic festival, you know, which I freaking love. But like, it's like things like Hard, it's, or like Lollapalooza, where it's like, I don't know what to expect from this crowd. And like, you know, a huge crowd showed up and like mosh pitted and like headbanged and stuff to house music and like disco. And I was like, okay, was not expecting that.
That's different.
It's just kind of just like, I don't know, just experiencing new things like that is one of my favorite parts. And then, I don't know, just finishing music too. It's kind of like you get happy. It's kind of like you just finished a painting or a puzzle or something. So I look forward to finishing music.
Yeah.
And, you know, working with new people too, and working with people outside of my genre and like learning new things from them.
That's interesting.
I feel like that's the most exciting. Those are the most exciting things that I look forward
yeah,
to.
Yeah, well, I love that. There's a couple things in what you just said. I mean, I think the idea of like loving to finish music, we were talking about how sometimes when you're in the middle of it, it can be frustrating, right? Uh-huh. But then I think the knowledge of how good it's going to feel when it's done,
yeah,
that's absolutely motivation.
The frustration makes it so rewarding when you do finish it, though, yeah. You know?
Have you done, actually, that's, I'm curious, have you done much touring, like just like road dog touring? Because I know you've done, you know, a bunch of big festivals and the bigger events. Have you done some of the smaller, just like city to city touring much?
No, I mean, I did it a little bit when I was playing in bands. We did like a van tour, you know, up the coast all the way to San Francisco and like, you know, hit up all the towns and stuff with like another band. But other than that, it's just been like flying like here and there. And like, I feel like the routing is kind of just like, you know, Orlando and then Texas. And then there's not really any rhyme or reason for it. It's just whatever date I'm there. So I haven't really done too much of that other kind of touring, but you know, who knows, maybe one day I'm going to be touring with my drum set and have like a full band and like get to do like the whole tour bus thing. But that's the thing. I don't know where this is going to go. And I look forward to like seeing where it is. You know?
Yeah. That's part of the fun too, right? Is like, there's always, yeah you keep challenging yourself all. I mean, everything we've been talking about, I think comes back to that idea. One of the last questions I wanted to ask you was, when I knew we were coming to talk, I was reading interviews and old articles about you. And something that came up a few different times was you were talking about how the success and the hype and the love that you were getting, it felt crazy to you. Like it was unexpected. Like you were surprised by how, I don't know if it's welcoming or just how excited people were for what you were doing. And I wanted to ask, do you still feel that way? Or do you feel like
I do? Maybe it might be imposter syndrome or something, but it's like every time I go to play a gig, like whether it be like a festival or a club or whatever, I'm like shocked that people, you know, in Florida come to see me. Or, you know, it's just, I always think like, oh my God, I hope people are there for my set when I play. And it's just like, they are. And it's like, just crazy to me. I don't know.
I guess what I'm getting at is like, do you feel like you've established yourself at this point? Or do you feel like you're still, you know, sort of forming, like we haven't seen the final form yet?
Yeah, no. I mean, I kind of feel like my taste is always kind of like evolving. So I don't even know if I have a final form. I might just be, I don't know. I feel like a caterpillar right now. I'm not a butterfly yet.
I like that. Yeah. That's.
I'm not even a cocoon yet. So I don't even know if I'm going to be a moth or, you know.
We don't even know yet. Yeah. Might be a whole different kind of bug. We have no idea.
Yeah, exactly.
I love that. All right. So just got a couple questions from the chat. We'll get you out of here.
Okay.
Talon from LA, shout out to LA, asks, this is kind of a general question, but it's a good one. We've been talking about this a little. Says, I was wondering, what are some big failures in your career that made you want to quit when it happened, but you decided to keep pushing?
I mean, there's a lot, you know, playing to empty rooms, like, you know, not getting any attention on any of your songs, like no one liking your music, like no one that you know playing it, or, you know, I remember like for a while, it actually still happens. People spell my name wrong on the flyers all the time. And you know, like I've had to wait in line at my own club shows. I've had to like, you know, my name's on the marquee and I'm still having to like wait in line to get in. It's just stuff like that. It's just like, just makes you feel like a failure, just, you know, not progressing in production or DJing skills. Like that makes you just feel like a failure, like train wrecking on stage. Like there's so many different things that, you know, and that's just DJing and producing, you know.
Yeah, I did it with so many different things.
Like, you know, I quit piano lessons, you know, kind of gave up on that, quit drums, you know, I quit surfing, but all that stuff has led me to here. So it's like, I can't really be mad that I quit those things because then I wouldn't be here. So I think just it's okay to fail. And you shouldn't even count how many times you fail because you're going to forget about all the failures because other things will come out of them and you'll be thankful for them. So
yeah, exactly.
Don't worry about how many times you fail.
Don't
fail
worry
every
about
day. Yeah. I fail every day.
That's the thing. Be happy for the failures. I mean,
that
question made me think about, you know, there's been all these times where I would pin my hopes to like one thing, whether it was like, oh, I want to put out music with this one label or oh, I just want to play this one show or this one festival. And then when that doesn't happen, of course you're crushed at the time, but it's, I think that's maybe another note is like, you can't, don't pin your hopes to one thing. Like the point of this career is like that we just keep going and we keep trying and creating and you can't predict what, when it's going to happen, you know?
Yeah. And I think just keep your options open too. I feel like every year I write down a list of like things I want to accomplish that year. Maybe it's like labels I want to release on or DJs I want to like producers I want to work with or festivals I want to play or something. And I make that list. And then, you know, the end of the year when I go to make another list, I look at the old list. I'm like, oh, I didn't do any of those things, but I got all this other cool stuff done. So it's still like a win, you know?
Yep.
So, and if you're holding yourself to like impossible standards too, it's just like, just be loose and let the journey take you where it's going to take you because it might take one person like a year to learn Ableton and start playing all these festivals and stuff like that. It might take someone else like 6 years, 10 years. So it's like, you just have to go at your own pace and know that everyone's journey is different.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. That's true. And I mean, it's like,
it's kind of like comparing yourself to someone, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, if you set impossible goals, you're just going to let yourself down. So just be loose to accepting what's going to happen, you know.
Yeah.
It's going to do what it's going to do no matter what.
There you go. So. And you helped me remember what I was going to say, which is the key to it, the secret, it's not even a secret, is just keep showing up. Don't quit.
Yeah.
Like that.
Exactly.
You can't always predict when it's going to happen, but if you put in the work and don't quit and keep showing up, it will happen. You just don't know when.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well,
and like, do not compare yourself to other people because other people, you know, they're on their own time. You're on your own time.
I love it. Absolutely. all right. Baby Weight. Shout out Baby Weight in the chat.
Hi, Cara. What's up?
What's good? Asks, aside from music, what hobbies, things, interests are you inspired by or gravitate towards when you need a reset?
I feel like yoga for me is a big thing. It's just helps me like part of it's like meditation, you know, helps me get into a different mindset, especially if I'm having a hard time. I feel like yoga is really good for me. That really helps me. But besides music, I like to like draw and paint here and there. I don't do it as much as I used to, but also just kind of like for me, it's like understanding that I don't need to be working all the time. I can take days off and I can relax. I can play video games all day if I want to.
Yep.
If I need to do that, then that's what I need to do, you know? And for it might work for other people, but for me, just like forcing myself to be in the studio every single day doesn't work for me because I ended up just not enjoying it. So that may work for other people, but I don't know. I like to play video games and just, I don't know.
Yeah.
Go swimming. I love swimming.
Absolutely. Yeah. These are all great answers. This is, I say this on the show all the time, but DJs need hobbies. Like creative people, you got to have something else that isn't your main thing that you do that kind of scratches that itch. Because when it all gets wrapped up in like, well, my passion, my career, my bank account, all that, like it gets too messy. You got to have something that's just pure like enjoyment and passion. That's,
I think like a lot of like, home activities like decorating and like painting like old furniture and stuff like that. I have a good time doing that too.
Oh, it's that's
like
cool.
Kind of like I don't know, like arts and crafts kind of stuff. I guess
I like that. That's great. Actually, I need to do more of that.
Yeah, it's nice.
Well, this has been really fantastic. I really appreciate you taking the time to do it. Before I ask you the final question, is there anything else we haven't talked about? Anything you have coming up you want to let people know? Anything else that's on your mind?
I have a song that came out on Friday, last Friday, for Peking Duck. So everyone should go listen to that.
I love that song. Yeah, I was just listening to that actually.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, it's like a little breakbeat remix I did. Other than that, I think we covered all the bases.
Okay, good. Yeah, this has been really fantastic. And so the final question, I ask this at the end of each one of these interviews.
Okay.
It's just like a simple sort of first thing that pops into your head kind of question.
Oh my God, I'm scared.
Don't be scared. There's no wrong answer. Okay. And the question is just looking for a time in your life, a moment, a memory. It could be from any time when in a single moment, music really deeply affected you, really had like a deep impact on you in that moment. And it doesn't have to be significant, kind of just the first thing that pops into your head.
I feel like it was during quarantine,
okay,
like during lockdown. I feel like I got really, really involved and emotionally involved in music. Whatever I was listening to, I just felt like it was all of me I was listening with, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. Kind of like back to probably when you first heard music, like as a younger kid, right? The first time, like when you're feeling all the feelings for the first time.
Yeah, it kind of like, I feel like the lockdown kind of like put the old perspective on music where it's just like emotional, you know, instead of just like hearing bangers and bangers, bangers. It's like having the music like take you somewhere like emotionally.
Mm. Can you think of any random songs that you were listening to that did that?
There's this one song I listen to a lot. It's by this band called Woman. It's WW Woman. And okay, like the song title has nothing to do with the actual song, but it's called Eating Ass in 2020.
Yeah,
but it's like the song title has nothing to do with it. It's just like this really chill, like electro, like indie, like dance kind of track. I listen to that one a lot.
I love, that's the best. That's the perfect answer for the most emotional track.
The title's so funny, but no, it's like, I don't know. And you know, I listen to a lot of Glass Animals too. Glass Animals kind of pulled me through, like, because they put out an album like, I think like in the middle of the lockdown. And I feel like just like listening, I got it on vinyl. And I just feel like listening to that over and over and over again was just like, that for me was a release.
I love that. And that's like kind of like reconnecting, like we were talking about earlier, you know, maybe people reset their production or whatever it is, but finding music like that, that's reconnecting with what made us love music in the first place, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to do this. It's been really great talking to you.
Okay. Awesome. Thanks for having me, and bye to everyone watching.
Goodbye. Yeah. See you later. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye.